James, welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. There is still time to pre-order your copy. Help support the show by hitting the link in our description. It's myself, Mo Moonsie, alongside me as always, Mr. Scott Perry and Mr. BJ Armstrong. How you guys doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I see my man is sporting the Detroit Lions polo today. That means football season, regular season is around the corner. There's one preseason game left, and that's this Saturday, 1 p.m. in Detroit. And guess who they're hosting, Mo?
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
Got it.
Hey. Okay, so this Sunday, huh?
This Saturday. Saturday game.
Okay. So pre-season on Sunday night when we record Monday's episode, then we'll discuss
it's
that.
It's preseason.
It's preseason. So. But can we get a preseason prediction for who's winning the Super Bowl this year?
Preseason prediction, who's winning the Super Bowl this year?
That's right.
Man, Mo, you starting out tough. I'm going to give you...
I know BJ is going to say Detroit, so I don't even need to ask.
Yeah. You know me. You Scott is way more accurate, but...
No, you guys got close last year.
Detroit, you know, out of that NFC, Detroit's got to be one of the favorites along... Their division is tough this year. Green Bay is going to be another one. Philadelphia, you got to figure, is going to... be right there in the mix as well. And depending upon what happens to the receiver there in San Francisco, Brandon Ayuk, if they can re-sign him, or hopefully they'll trade him. Pittsburgh. But San Francisco will be another team. So that's tough. I tell you what, you know, this Mahomes quest to win a third in a row, which no one has done. Man, I don't know if they can do it, but they got to be one of the. I'm not gonna pick them. I think the favorites right now, as much as I want to say my Steelers, I can't put them at the there right today, and it pains me to say this, but the Ravens are gonna be pretty good this year.
Okay.
Baltimore Ravens.
Purple ones. Yep.
That
AFC is always tough.
The AFC is thick. You know, the Jets are better this year. You know, Cincinnati and our division. You know, the AFC North is a gauntlet. BJ's going to experience that this year because quietly the NFC North has become one of the best divisions in football.
See, AFC, overnight. NFC. I just know the KFC. So anyway.
Yeah, hey, Mo, I'm looking for some wings over there.
No, I already ate them for dinner. Come on, man. You're too late. I got to get my protein in. But we got to talk about some basketball while we're here. Okay. Our favorite player from the Olympics, Gershon Yabusele, has signed a deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, provided he completes his buyout with Real Madrid. We spoke about the Sixers on this show, and both of you expressed your concern about their lack of depth at the four position. Is Gershon Yabusele the answer to the Sixers' problems at that four spot? One of you.
I don't know if he's the answer, but I will say this. You know, I didn't see the particulars of the deal, but I'm sure it fits financially where they're at and what they're trying to do for the quality of players. So...
$2.2 million. I think it's 1 year.
Yes. 2.2 million. So I think financially, you know, as you're building out your roster, they have three players now that are at the max with their big three. So it puts them financially in a place where they have to be careful, or at least that's the narrative, and to be able to get a player to play. He did play well, I thought, in the Olympics this year. So
he averaged 19.7 points on 67.5% true shooting. And out of all the players who played in the final, the likes of LeBron, Wembanyama, and KD, he only trailed Stephen Curry in terms of points per game for the Olympics.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, he played excellent. You could tell how much he's improved since his time in Boston. And so often timing is so important. Is he the answer as the starting four? I can't say that that's the case, but I really do like him as my backup four with the second unit, where he can come in and be a tough matchup for a lot of teams because he is powerful and physical, so he can play strong around the basket. But he showed us in the Olympics he's improved his ability to step away from the rim and make some threes and create a little bit off the bounce. So, again, Philly's all in, as we know, and you just start picking up as many viable players as you can so that you can give it your best shot this season. So I like the signing for them in this low-risk, high-reward type of signing, too, because it doesn't cost you anything.
Scott, did you say it was a $2.2 million contract?
I did.
So his buyout amount from Real Madrid is $2.5 million. Is that then the team's responsibility to pay that, or does he have to contribute some money towards it, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, the team can participate. You can buy out to a certain amount of that contract. They can buy out to a certain amount. I don't believe the 2.5, I haven't looked at my CBA lately, but I don't, 2.5 was not ever the number that you could completely buy that out before. It used to be around 750 to $1 million that you could do that with. So I'd have to look at what transpired in this deal, but obviously it's going to get paid. That's one thing you can rest assured on. For him to be cleared to play, that has to be settled and paid upon. So I'm sure that would be agreed. So again, that was just the amount I read in the paper. I hadn't seen the official paperwork coming over. So it may or may not be taking that into account.
So this brings me to my next question. Is this year's Sixers team Joel Embiid's best chance at winning an NBA championship, in your opinions?
I don't think so. I wouldn't say so, and here's why. Mm-hmm. The Celtics are as good as they've been over the last, 4 or 5 years. The Celtics are, up until last year, I thought Philadelphia, a year or two, I thought Philadelphia had the best team over here in the Eastern Conference. Or at least they could compete with Milwaukee. Now, it's Boston. It's clear they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. You got New York breathing down everyone's neck. Giannis is still sitting there. You got Orlando coming. You got Cleveland. That's nothing to play with. And then you have Philly, and the big concern with Philly is Joel's health. I mean, he's coming off of a meniscus tear or something this year, and so I don't think this is his best chance. But if he's healthy, I think he will certainly be a tough out. But right now I think the Celtics are clear, far, and I think they are above everyone else in the Eastern Conference at this moment.
But the Eastern Conference has got better. But Scott, as a team, as the Sixers team, how the roster is constructed, do you like this team that's now constructed with Paul George and Tyrese Maxey and Yabusele more than the 2019 team, which had Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons before the breakdown, Tobias Harris when he played better than he does nowadays? Do you think that team was better than this team in a vacuum, assuming the rest of the Eastern Conference stayed the same?
On paper, you can go back to Ben Simmons, who was a 6'10", versatile wing player, but couldn't shoot and never really developed that ability to shoot. And there was a big negative come playoff time. I'm going to say that I like this team better, and I'm going to disagree with BJ a little bit on this. I agree with him on this premise that Boston is definitely the best team in the Eastern Conference. I agree with him on that. But I'm also say this is Joel's best chance because I do believe this may be the deepest team he's been a part of. And when you talk about his health and you talk about Paul George being 35, to me, they got to win it now. They've got to push the envelope now, at latest the following season. I look at this pairing as a 2 year window max, just based on age, injury history for both players, both Paul George and Joel Embiid. And you got Tyrese Maxey, who is now in the position and he's ready to carry a bigger load consistently throughout the regular season, which is most important. Obviously, it'll be important for him to show up big in the playoffs as well, but they're going to need his youth during the regular season when Joel is missing his certain number of games and Paul George is going to miss some of his. They're going to need this guy to play big. I think he's primed to do that. And so while the gauntlet is tougher than maybe what it was in 2019, like I said, I don't disagree with that. I do think this is going to be his best chance. I don't mean he's going to win it, but it's just looking at the roster and, you know, the moves they made. They had Caleb Martin as well. And
Drummond, so Eric Gordon.
Drummond, Gordon. But they got to win it now. Cause you know, Drummond's, he's plus 30. Eric Gordon has got to be 34 himself. They got to win it now. And, I don't know that they're going to be good enough to, but in terms of what is there, where they're at right now, to me, this is going to be his best chance.
Yeah, 2019, they finished third in the East Conference. The Bucks finished first, Raptors second with Kawhi Leonard. The Celtics were fourth, Pacers fifth, and so on and so forth. But I think that roster, in my opinion, may have been the best chance that they had. Especially with the lack of quality teams in the Eastern Conference at that time. The Pistons finished eighth in 2019.
Joel has a little more maturity with him now. That's why I would say now, too. You know, 5 years, 19. He's a little more mature as a player and understanding, what he's got to be about and what he's got to do in terms of being a leader for his team. So, 5 years is a big difference.
So I want to ask you guys about another team in the Eastern Conference. And I already know that you guys are going to tell me that you can never count out Eric Spoelstra. But today, Tyler Herro said, we haven't been healthy yet, but when we do get healthy, we have a very deep team. That team is deep enough to make a run through the East and ultimately win an NBA title.
Who said that?
Tyler Herro said that about the Miami Heat.
Okay.
Do you see any possibility of the Miami Heat as currently constructed? I believe Jimmy Butler is in a contract year, so he might actually make an effort in the regular season this year. Do you see any way in which the Miami Heat can come out of that now stacked Eastern Conference?
As much as it pains me to say this, I do not. And, nobody's a bigger fan of the Miami Heat and what they stand for and Heat culture and all those things than I am. I just don't think they're talented enough to beat the teams we talked about earlier, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and they're going to have their hands full just in their own state now with Orlando Magic. And Milwaukee, if Giannis is healthy, and they've done well against Milwaukee. We've seen that. I'm not suggesting that they're easy out. Don't get me wrong. And I love the improvement that Bam has made. And, if you're banking on, Jimmy Butler to have a great year going into a contract year and all that, very plausible. But I just don't see enough there to beat some of those better teams. As we sit here today, now, as we know, injuries and things like that can happen during the season that changes the calculus. But as we sit here today, I'm going to say no to that question, Mo.
BJ, what are your thoughts?
No, I'm not. No, I it's no other way for me to put it. No,
straight to the point. I love it.
Yeah, I'm. For this very reason, 82 games, that's a grind. And right now, Jimmy Butler, who is arguably still consider their best player on that team, he's going to have to play a significant amount of games in order for this to be accomplished. Now, again, I think the respect that we all have for Miami and what they've been able to do, and that goes without saying, but now they have to do it. And as you start to ask, you know, Bam has been, you know, he's been terrific as far as playing and availability. So I'm not worried about him, but I am worried about Tyler Hero. I am concerned about Jimmy Butler's availability. You know, Kevin Love is, you know, he's year 16 or so. Okay. These guys are getting up there now. And now that puts a lot of pressure, you know, to guys to step up. I think they picked up, didn't they pick up Alex Burke?
Yeah, they did pick up Alex Burke. And I like that pickup of Alex.
I like that pickup, but, you know, I mean,
he's older too.
Yeah, he's a savvy veteran right now. And, you know, I like the kid. It's the kid that was
the kid drafted
last year. I like the kid.
Oh, you're talking about Hakez.
Yeah, Hakez. I like him.
Yes. Yeah.
And but Scott, you know, you didn't get to Summer League, but the kid, is it Ware? Is that his
name? Oh yeah. No, I really like him.
I was very encouraged of what he could do. Right. You know, I don't know when they're going to implement him, but he can do something. Now, I don't know if he's ready to jump in there right now, but he looked like he has a very bright future. I just don't see enough. I don't see that player who's going to force the issue and play downhill, especially during the regular season, and play with that thrust and that energy that you're going to need. And they are an aging team at this particular time, just like the Milwaukee Bucks. They are an older team. I do like the group. I think they'll be well coached. They're going to play hard, so forth and so on. But I don't see them as currently constructed, ready to advance or move forward unless one of these guys step up that I'm not aware of. But I do like the kid Ware. I thought he played very well in the summer, and he looked very encouraging as a young player, a young prospect.
And a sneaky loss for them this year, and we talked about him with Philadelphia, is Caleb Martin.
Yeah.
Caleb Martin, when you talk about regular season play, you're talking about a guy being available.
Oh, you talk about a player
playing both sides of the ball, playing hard.
Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals to get to the finals that year.
Yeah, no, he's tough. And, you know, somebody's going to have to fill that void.
Let me ask you guys about this. Jimmy Butler is 35 years old. He's making $49 million this year. He has a player option for $52 million next year, but he probably won't take that as he's not signing an extension right now, but next offseason he will be looking for an extension. You often hear about the phenomenon of players in a contract year outperforming their usual level of production. Scott, from a front office perspective, is this a real thing in your prediction? Do you, you know, if a player's suddenly playing much better than usual in their contract year, how much does that weigh in to when you're signing them? Because we've seen players get deals and then not quite be as good as what they were beforehand. Does weigh into you as a member of a front office?
Mo, I always looked at it case by case, you know, and what that guy's resume said to me. Have there been players that we've seen that fit that mold of, okay, they're playing just okay after the initial signing of the first contract, you say, so, you know, year two and three, they're okay, and then boom, they appear on the radar big time in year four, get the big contract, and then, you know, go through years five and six kind of average or mediocre play, and then boom, jump up again. Yeah, so if the guy has that kind of history, yeah, I'm going to take that into an account. It gets down to each individual player. Some players, and this is what I always look for, and I've had this conversation with a lot of, you know, basketball executives over the years and just basketball people. Man, I want people who love to play. And I used to say this a lot. Give me a player that if they shut this NBA down tomorrow and we had a pickup game at 11 a.m. the rest of the week, who's going to show up because they just love to play and compete? It wasn't about the money. Mm. Again, obviously, I'm not saying the money's not important. Trust me, everybody's trying to make a lot of money, the whole thing. But I'm saying, but their passion of playing and competing was on par or greater than the than what they were chasing necessarily contractually. Mm. So that's what. So I'm looking for those players that have shown me that they just love to play basketball and they're gonna play. Again, if there was no organized league, they would be. And basketball players I didn't listen to, they know who I'm talking to and they know what I'm talking about. BJ knows exactly what I'm talking about. You know, that does this competition matter to you? Because at the end of the day, Mo, here's what I know. And I didn't play in the NBA, but like I said, I worked in the NBA for 23 years. And obviously friends with a lot of NBA players, you know, like BJ here on the line and just and working with NBA players for a number of years. When you're in the middle of January and your ankle is a little sore, back's a little stiff, you wake up that morning and you got a game that night. I want the guy that's going to say, yeah, I feel that way, but I'm still going to play. Because mm. A, I love to compete. I want to do that. And B, and I mean, that's A. And B, this is my job. This is what I do. You mm-hmm. know, when you talk about the GOATs and all that stuff, I saw some the other day, Michael Jordan played 9 years, had 9 years of 82 games.
That's pretty good friend, Mr. Armstrong here as well.
Yes, exactly. BJ had that same kind of run. See, that's where winning starts. When it's that important, when you got enough players that value and care about the game like that, it normally pays off on the other side. So anyway, to answer your question, yeah, do you? I pay attention to that. Yeah, it's case by case on what you know about the player, either your personal experience with him because he's been in your locker room for an extended period of time or from what you know in evaluating him from afar and what your scouts have been telling you about him, you know, over the years and, you know, what's his makeup like. And you can kind of see. And we've seen a number of teams get burned by those guys who are, quote unquote, those contract year players. So,
BJ, as a player, former player yourself, did it weigh into your mind the year that your contract was expiring that you'd play even better? And as an agent, do you have these conversations with players that their contract's running out? They need to pick things up, so to speak.
You know, Mo, am I aware and naive enough to think that it doesn't happen? No, I am. I'm aware. I was aware back then as a player. I'm aware now as an agent, as a front office guy, I was aware of that. Certainly that could be the mentality. However, I would prefer to the following as I play. I aspired as a young kid. I wanted to be a professional. I just wanted to be a pro. To be a pro meant just like Scott and I, when we were young, I just wanted to play, and I had a chance to play versus the very best players in the world every night. Nothing beat that. And it was just a bonus that I happened to get paid for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. when we were young kids, Scott and I, we would drive everywhere around the city of Detroit just trying to find where the best players were playing at. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And to be able to, Mo, they put me in a hotel. I could get room service before the game. I had a chartered plane to get to the city, and all I had to do was show up for 48 minutes. I didn't
you
see
live
this
in a
as
dream.
I was in, you know, that was the greatest thing. So for me to be a pro meant everything to me now, to me. And I was very fortunate. You know, Scott has this thing, and he would always ask, when we talk about roster construction, how many of these guys will actually show up? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many guys would just show up to the gym? You just had an open gym. How many guys would show up? And Scott and I would say all the time, you got to at least, you got to put together a team of at least like 7 or 8 of them guys just going to show up.
Exactly. Yeah. Half your team at least. Yeah.
Well, I never had a problem on a good team guys showing up. Now, that was the last thing that I was concerned about. Now, as you would say, Mo, we didn't run from the smoke. Now, we was looking for the smoke. Did we always play well? No, no one plays well. Did we always win the game? No. But, Mo, like, I had a chance to show up and play. Like, I can't think of anything better. Like, Mo, the competition, at least where I'm from, that was rule number one. Rule number two, once you get to the court, now you might as well play for something, so try to win the game. And then rule number three, make it entertaining. That's called, hey, that's called the business of basketball.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
So as a professional, competition was, that was like, that's a non-starter. You don't go to the gym talking about, I'm only playing for me. Like, as a guard, Mo, as a guard, when a guy got paid on my team, okay, I took great pride in that as the guard because I wanted to contribute to the success of my teammates. I wanted to contribute because it's the business that we're in. Like, if I can help Mo get paid, and Mo can say, hey, man, when I was working with BJ, I didn't even have to worry about it. When I ran the court hard, boom. And you knew that thing was coming. Mm. You knew when you was coming off the pick, that thing was there. That, to me, Mo, that's everything. That's like when you see me, we going to dap up like, hey, yeah, that's my guy. Yeah, that's my, hey, I wanted the assist. Mo wanted the 2 points. That works. Mm-hmm. And we win the game. That's a win-win. So I took great pride in that and not just playing for me. I wanted to play for the success of the group. And so that meant a lot to me. That means a lot when you see guys. I mean, Scott, when you go back to your championship teams up there in Detroit, hey, that's one thing, Mo, that's different. When you win, you start playing for other people.
Mm. Yeah, no question.
Now, that means no something. Question. So, again, no I was fortunate to play in a winning environment. I was fortunate to have people as a young player to say, hey, man, winning matters. So it kind of stuck with me. But I am aware of some bad habits that you can pick up along the way, too. And I'm not naive to say I don't see that. But winning is fun. I loved it. And when you see the guys, even to this day, there is a bond. That's a real thing. You might just be walking in the hotel and I may see a guy, hey, we going to stop. And we go dap, and we go connect, and we go share a little 30 seconds or whatever it is, and let's catch up. That's a real thing. So
yeah,
I took great pride in that. And when a guy got paid, man, he had something to do with it. You know what I mean? And that's what the game is really all about.
It is always and has always been about buckets. I should have done that for the outro. Appreciate the knowledge as always, fellas.
And BJ was making you think it was about the assist from him, right?
Bo, you know what? I believe in karma. Exactly. Bo, we had a rule in Detroit. If a man hit 2 baskets in a row, Mo, it automatically comes back to you. See?
Exactly.
It automatically. So, Mo, I believe in karma.
I'm here for it. Appreciate you, gentlemen. You guys at home, make sure you subscribe to the show. Hopefully you learned something on today's episode. YouTube, Spotify, Apple, whatever you get your podcast. We'll be back for one more episode tomorrow and then a little break for just a couple of days. We'll be back next week. So in the meantime, you know the vibes. Get buckets.